Did you know that November is Oz Music Month? Or, as we like to call it here on Away, Mob Music Month. It's a celebration of the extraordinary array of homegrown talent in the music industry. People whose craft brings literal hours of entertainment as you move about your day. Sue Ray is one of those people. A literal powerhouse of Australian alt-country music, Sue has been making waves across the country music scene for over a decade now, and her distinctive voice, deep, rich, and absolutely captivating, has earned her 3 Queensland Music Awards and recognition at both national and international levels. And in just a moment, she's joining me to yarn about the power of authentic storytelling in song. But first, this is her 2023 release, Same Train.
Interest rates are going up again, outpricing us from the house. My dad grew up in, and I'm tired of saying goodbye to the neighbors I've known most of my life, to the neighbors I've known most of my life. This town is blowing up fast. Big city money is moving in and renovating our past. And I'm tired of saying goodbye to the stores I've been shopping in most of my life. But no matter what side of the tracks you were from,
this is Sue Ray. You just heard my track Same Train, which was a single I released in 2023. And it comes from basically my real life. I moved back to Australia, moved back to my hometown, and couldn't afford to rent or buy in my own hometown anymore because it is now a boom town. And it was just sort of a little song that originally was just for myself. It was just a release of that kind of frustration of where's all the familiar bars, where's all the familiar shops and familiar faces and the takeaway I used to get my favourite sandwich at. Where's it all gone? But also that no matter what side of the train tracks you live on, we all have the same thing in common because I wanted to live on one side of town and my mum said, you can't afford to live on that side of the tracks. And it just made me think, well, no matter what side of the tracks we live on, we all hear the same train, which kind of became a metaphor for sometimes the very thing that divides us is the one thing we have in common. So then I kind of thought I have to release it. It has to go out to the world.
So when you say you were moving back to your hometown of Toowoomba, that was, I believe, from having lived in Nashville. What drew you to Nashville?
Honestly, it wasn't the original plan. I never really had Nashville or America on the cards. I'd always been so inspired by Berlin. I always thought I'd live in East Berlin and live the artist's dream. I went and lived in England for a year and travelled all around Europe and loved that. And when my visa ran out, I came home and a friend who'd just come back from Nashville said, "So Ray, you should be in Nashville with your music." And I thought, well, I'm not really commercial country. And he said, well, you don't have to be there. There's all different genres. And yeah. And then I heard about this Nashville Songwriters Grant going through Sounds Australia and I applied for it. And I thought, this is a sign, you know, I've got this green card and I can go to Nashville. And then I didn't get the grant, but they did offer me a spot on one of their showcases. And they said, well, if you're in Nashville, we'll put you on one of our showcases. So I went over there to check it out and I just fell in love from the moment my feet hit the pavement. I was in love and there was an energy there that I wasn't expecting, a camaraderie that I really didn't know I'd been seeking. And just the magic of Nashville took over. It is a music town.
That's the thing. Like, you're right. It is such a music town. How did being there influence and impact the shape of your music as a songwriter?
Not to reference Karate Kid, but I feel like it was like a wax on, wax off phase where I was learning so much, but I was so entrenched in also working a day job, paying the bills and all of that, that I didn't realise how much I was actually learning until I came back to Australia and started working more within the Australian music industry. And then all of a sudden these skills that I didn't know I'd learned were coming in handy, like co-writing, just being able to perform five nights a week for 3 or 4 hours at a time and just being able to hone my stage presence, just ability to work with others. Because prior to moving to Nashville, I'd never considered co-writing. Like in Australia, it wasn't really a thing 15 years ago where I would bring a song to my band and they would just learn it, or the drummer would bring a song to the band and say, let's learn it. And it was always sort of brought to us as a, not as like a co-write, but then in Nashville, everything's about the co-write. And the first time I was in a co-write, I found it really kind of awkward because I wasn't used to getting feedback in real time. I wasn't used to someone saying, no, I don't like that lyric, or how about this chord instead? And it sort of really became obvious I had to relent some of my sort of need for control. And it was hard at first, but after I did a few co-writes, I started to actually really like it. I started to realize the importance of having someone else's input in someone else's lyrics because they had different life experiences to me and they might have known different guitar chords than I would normally play, and suddenly there was these beautiful colours coming out in songs that I was participating in that I couldn't have done by myself. And co-writing just became such a big part of my writing process, and so it really brought that out in me.
I have heard that when it comes to Nashville as opposed to other places, like other big writing towns like Memphis, people are from Memphis, like the people that live there are from there, whereas in Nashville, you've come to Nashville.
Yeah, it's a pilgrimage. There's so many transplants, and I was there only for about 3.5 years, but I ran a showcase at the bar that I worked at, which was the Nashville Underground. But we called it the Down Underground Showcase. It was every Wednesday night because there were so many Australians in Nashville, we never ran out of artists to put on our showcase. Like every week for 3 years, I had country music singers that were coming to Nashville to perform, and there's so many of us. And I had artists from Canada and the UK and people writing to me wanting to be on the showcase. And I realised it really is a town of basically implants.
Yeah. But
there is a few people I met that were born and bred there, and they were rare.
Well, what drew you back home?
We planned to stay forever. I had an apartment that was on a long-term lease. We sublet it out to some friends when we came home just to have our first baby. We thought we'd have a baby in Australia just because, you know, the American health system was a bit scary to me. So we thought we'd come home just for a year. And so we came home for 1 year. And then on Christmas Day, actually, 2017, I was heading to Woodford Folk Festival to set up because I had some shows there. And I got a phone call from my roommate saying, "Sue, the apartment burned down. There'd been an electrical fire." And unfortunately, we had nowhere to go back to. And my partner, being American, was like, "Well, that's great. I want to stay in Australia a bit longer," because he'd never had a job that paid holiday pay or sick pay. So he was really happy to stay in Australia a bit longer. And then happy accident number two came along, another baby. And so we decided to stay and then have him here. And then COVID struck. And suddenly we'd been here 3 years, 4 years. And I sort of thought, oh, okay, I guess we're not going back.
As an independent artist, you have quite a powerful body of work. You've also shared the stage with some incredible artists, including your mentor, Uncle Kutcher Edwards. Mm-hmm. How did you two meet?
Oh, I'm going to cry. It was the last gigs that I did just before the COVID lockdown. So at the start of 2020, we were both down in Tasmania performing at the Signet Folk Festival. And I had never met Uncle. I'd obviously heard his music and was a big fan. And I found out I was performing on a showcase called Sublime Voices. And it was Uncle Kutcher, myself, and Dwayne Everett Smith. That was his name, the most beautiful, beautiful singer. And the three of us were there and we all started singing. And naturally, as we do, we all started harmonising with each other. And it was so powerful. And I start crying and I look over and Dwayne's got tears running down his face and Uncle Kutcher's grabbing for tissues because it was such a magical moment and such a strong connection. And the audience was crying, not from sadness, but from just this, I don't know, energy and elation. Mm. And afterwards I got talking to Uncle Kutcher and he was like, "Oh, I'd love to do more shows with you." And we exchanged numbers. And then literally, I think a month later, COVID sort of started to kick in. And the wonderful thing was he meant it. His wife, Fiona, is the most beautiful woman who is also a mentor to me in so many ways. And she kept checking in on me. Every few months I'd get a phone call. "So, Ray, when are we going on the road?" And sure enough, true to their word, a couple of years later, once things had died down and they were able to cross the border and they said, "We're doing a tour of New South Wales. We'd love you to come with us as an opening act." And I said, "Fantastic." You know, they had this whole tour. We're all up through from Sydney up through Tamworth and everywhere right up to Brunswick Heads. And I said, "Oh, who's going to be in your band?" And they said, "Oh, we're just bringing keyboard and guitar and drums." And I said, "Well, who's playing bass?" And they said, "Oh, we're not really bringing a bass player." And I just said, "Well, I can play bass for you. It'll save you some money. I'll open up and then I'll play bass for you." And they said, "Yes." And so I learnt the songs and like one tour turned into, "Oh, Sue, can you come and do this next show? And can you do this next show?" And then that turned into a year of me being on the road with Uncle Kutcher and right through to even performing at Sydney Opera House in the backing band. But you're never just in the backing band with Uncle Kutcher because he's the most incredible sharer. He's in the music industry to share his stories and connect. And he's about true connection. Like, I don't know if you've ever seen him live, but there's never a dry eye in the house when he performs. And or on the stage, we're all crying. But he would, every night, no matter how big an audience, he would stop and say, "Now I'm going to let Sue Ray sing a couple of songs." And he'd bring me in, and even at his Sydney Opera House show, his show, he let me sing three of my originals where the band backed me and he sang harmonies for me. Like, who does that? Like, who shares the limelight like that in such a generous way? And so there's just such a strong connection. And him and his wife are just like family for me. And you know, my kids call him Uncle Kutcher, and whenever we FaceTime and he asks them about their latest footy game and, you know, like just the most generous soul. So that taught me a lot, watching him perform live and how he formulates his set, how he tells his stories. Like, it really, like, I thought I knew about performing and how to win over a crowd, but I knew nothing. I feel like the older I've gotten, the less I know and the more I need to learn.
We've talked a little about the way that you've kind of embraced that decentering of yourself. But I think when it comes to, like, there is definitely a point at which you have to be at the center of your work. How do you balance that? How do you navigate that kind of thing of putting yourself there and being prepared to, like, own the stage, own the moment, own the song?
I think having kids did that for me. It forced me into that. Because prior to having kids, I think there's an element of you when you're Peter Pan syndrome, is that you think you're going to be young forever and you think you've got all the time in the world. And I just always had, I'm such an ideas person. And so I would throw so many darts at the board at the same time. I would be doing backing guitar for one person, bass in someone else's band, trying to do the Sue Ray stuff on the side. And I was having lots of fun. And then suddenly 15 years went by and I hadn't really focused on myself. But then when I had kids, I had such limited time and energy. So when I did have any time, I had to really be focused with that. And I had to just go, okay, I ain't got time for that anymore. I can't just say yes to everything. I'll pick the Sue Ray because that's what's going to pay the bills and leave a legacy for my kids. So then I was forced into focusing more on that. And I'm such a collaborator by nature. So even when I say Sue Ray band, I always have people that I really respect in my band, people that I collaborate with. I love bringing them along on the journey. And so for a few years, I was still focusing so much on creating opportunity for others and making sure they were paid and they were getting opportunities. And I was still always the last to get paid. But then having kids, it's like, no, I've got rent to pay. I don't have energy to be supporting all these other people. So I really just, it forced me into really analysing, how do I make myself central? Because essentially it's my name on the poster at the festival. It's my name on the gig. It's my name on the album, the single, the social media pages. It's me. It's Sue Ray. So now when I put myself forward for things, it sounds mean, but I'm putting myself forward. Mm. And I have to delegate now, and I have to go, well, I don't have energy and time for that, so I will ask my guitarist to do that and I pay them for that. But I still remind them that it's my show without being a diva. I have to make sure I get paid first. So it means saying no to certain things that I know won't pay enough for me to bring my band, putting myself forward for things where it's just me turning up and playing solo. It's about not feeling bad. It's like that analogy, you've got to put your own oxygen mask on first before you can help anyone else. And I spent so many years trying to support so many other people because I love doing that, but then my own brand suffered. So it sounds selfish, but if I'm going to help all these other people in my band and create opportunity and open windows and doors for others, I can't do that if I'm not putting myself first for a while.
Mm. You mentioned that you've been back in Nashville doing some recordings. Does this mean that there's a new album on the horizon?
Yes, there is. I'm so proud of this one. It's like I feel like it's an amalgamation of all the different aspects of me. Some songs on there I wrote 15 years ago that have been reimagined by the producer. Some of them were brand new that I wrote a week before I went to Nashville. And the funny story is that the producer is Mike Lapinto, who is just such an incredible producer and guitarist, instrumentalist as well. And we met living in Nashville like 15 years ago. We used to work in the same guitar shop at Carter's Vintage Guitars. And he's one of the funniest, most generous people I've ever met. And we stayed good friends. And when I got the funding, I got a grant last year and I got this funding and he was coming over to perform with Chris Stapleton. He's in Chris Stapleton's backing band, which is so incredible that he's gone from, selling guitars to playing guitar for such an amazing artist. And he got us on the door at the show and we were hanging out after the show. And I just said, what else are you up to these days? And he said, oh, I do producing when I'm not on the road. And he'd been in my band when I used to play in Nashville. So he knows me, he knows my songs. And I said, oh, would you be able to do that for me? And he went, absolutely. And he said, what do you need? I said, well, what does you producing entail? He goes, well, I provide the studio, the musicians, the sound engineer. And I went, great. When have you got some weeks off? He said, in April, I got 2 weeks off. And I went, great, that's school holidays. And it just all happened like that so quickly. And I booked the flights a few days later and Next thing you know, I'm in the studio and the sound engineer that I didn't know when I get there turns out to be Sean Sullivan, who's a 5-time Grammy Award winning sound engineer. He has done all of Sturgill Simpson's and, you know, Tyler Childers' music and Molly Tuttle. He's amazing Americana artists, and Sierra Farrell he's done stuff with. And I get there and it's this incredible studio and all these session musicians that are all Mike's peers and friends are like the best of the best. And he got me mates rates. So I just was just standing there just with this dumb grin on my face with the headphones on. And it was recorded live, so all of them were in their little booths and we recorded the songs in 2 to 3 takes. Did it over 3 days, and he did everything. I didn't have to lift a finger, and it was the first time in my life I felt so held. I didn't have to do all the dirty work myself this time, and I was able to really relax and just really just sing. And so these songs are just so special, and I can't wait for people to hear them. And then the first song was actually a song called Before the Rain, which I wrote the week before I got to Nashville, and it's getting released in February. And yeah, I just can't tell you how excited I am for you to hear it, because it's just such a cool album.
Oh, well, we will definitely have to have you come back when the album is released.
I love that. It's so exciting. I can't wait for the world to hear it. And again, as an independent artist, I don't have a label. I don't have a manager or anything. I do it all myself. But I truly believe in my heart that good songs find the right people. So even though I may not have millions of streams or anything, the people that need to hear these songs will find them. And I really hope you enjoy them as much listening to them as I did making it.
Well, you're going to share one more song with us here on Away. It's called Walking These Streets, and I was hoping that you would introduce it.
Yes, okay. I co-wrote it with the amazing Tia Gostello and Moss. And it was my first sort of commercial country song. We wrote it basically about the fact that we're all traveling musicians. We all are on the road a lot, and it's really easy to sort of forget yourself when you're on the road. But the one thing that always reminds you who you are, for good or bad, is your hometown. It's that familiar feeling you get when you're home, walking the streets you grew up on, and about your friends and family are the ones who remind you who you are, for good or bad.
In these streets again. In these streets again. Walk in these streets again.
Sue Ray there. I'll be sure to keep you in the loop about Sue's upcoming album, but you can always check out what she's up to through her website, SueRayMusic.com.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.